Okay, welcome back to Spartan Up. We are in Boston, and today we're talking to John Levy. Now, Joe says nothing good happens after 11 p.m. at night, but he wrote a book called The 2 a.m. Principle, and he's going to tell us why maybe it is good and talk about the intersection of science and adventure. So, Joe, Johnny, Sephra, Colonel Nye, and Marion, let's go on this adventure.
Oh, nice.
Come on, was that good?
It's very good.
We're in New York City. We are going to the 8th floor. See John Levy.
What's the name of the manor?
The manor, yes.
Yeah, with John Levy, who is a superstar. How many books have you written?
This is my first book. It's called The 2 a.m. Principle.
2 a.m. Principle, which we're gonna get into. But first, let's tell the audience why you're an expert in some areas that could help us with success.
So my background is I'm a human behavior scientist. I do research mostly out of Moran Cerf's lab, which is called C-Lab, and he's associated with MIT, NYU, and Kellogg. And
so you're smart?
Sometimes. Right. It depends on the day. Right. But what I do is I do research on why we make the decisions that we make and what affects them.
Right. Anything. Why human beings make the decisions they make.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. So it could be we'll look at mobile dating, right? And why do we date the people we date? And we find weird things like there's an 11.6% increased chance that you'll date somebody if they have the same initials as you. It's called implicit egotism. So something that reminds you of yourself is more attractive.
Wow.
All the way through to why people use coupons or why people click on certain buttons on the internet or whatever it is that you could imagine. And most of my time is actually spent applying other people's research. So I'll look at how to help companies become more successful using ideas like the IKEA effect. And the IKEA effect is if you spend more effort on something, you like it more. So that's why people disproportionately like their IKEA furniture because they had to physically assemble it themselves.
Got it.
And so you can get people to like a product more or people more by actually investing effort into it.
So they must love Spartan Race by the time they get to the finish line.
Exactly.
Right?
Because there's what's even more amazing about Spartan Race is that, or a great workout in general, is that human beings cannot process the duration of pleasure or pain. What they remember are the peaks of an experience and how they end. Right. So in the case of Spartan Race, the end is so exciting and exhilarating, and the flood of hormones
chemicals in the brain.
Yeah, it just completely floods you. And so that ending is so great.
So it negates all the pain from the starting line.
Or it becomes a matter of pride that even though it was painful, I made it through. And so it's one of the reasons that it's so incredible. And you have those amazing peaks because you guys build in these just awesome obstacles that people then talk about for years to come.
Forever. So, given that, how long have you been doing this research?
I've been in the world of research probably for about 5-6 years. I've been super interested in it most of my life because I grew up incredibly unpopular as a child. My school teacher decided to come in 8th grade, throw out the seating chart, and announce that every person is going to secretly submit 2 people they don't want to sit down next to and 2 people they do want to sit with. And I unfortunately found out 2 things. The first was that there was 1 student that nobody wanted to sit with. And the second was that that student was me. Right. And so I was totally brokenhearted, right? In 8th grade, your school is like your entire life. And I became really interested in what affects people's decisions. Why was it that I was the unpopular one where somebody else was super popular?
You have that teacher's address? You want me to send a couple of guys to go visit him?
So I have no qualms with it whatsoever. I think she was, like, it was a small class, so I think she was really just trying to be creative and make the class happy. And, you know, there's always unforeseen issues. So, like, you know, fact of the matter was I was super geeky, and that geekiness and that interest in science actually paid off in a huge way.
Sure. So you've been doing research for a while. So tell us some more interesting things, like the IKEA effect.
Sure, absolutely. So one of the actual effects that had the biggest impact on my life is something called the winner effect. And the winner effect works like this. Let's say you go into a challenge, and you overcome the challenge, you beat it. Your body floods with testosterone, also with a bunch of other things, dopamine, adrenaline, and so on. And it actually prepares you for your next challenge. You become more likely to win the next battle. And if you look historically at, I think boxers did this, they set up what's called a tomato can fights, is that right? It's fights that they knew that the boxer would win ahead of time so that a few fights later, when they have an actual major fight, they walk in so confident that they have an advantage to winning.
Got it.
The problem is that if you win too much, then you have this false sense of security, and you think you're invulnerable. So animals in nature spend too much time in the open, and then they get hunted, or they get into unnecessary fights and get killed.
Right.
And the way this affects us as people is, if you're a Wall Street trader and you keep getting positive responses from your trades, you think you can't fail.
Right.
Or in my case, what happened was in 2013, I take on these insane challenges. And they're mostly with travel. So I went to, my goal was every month to go to the biggest event in the world, wherever it was. And in July, I went to Pamplona, Spain for Running of the Bulls. So I literally trained for months, cardio, right? I learned the path. I know all the rules. Never look back because the bulls hit you the moment you slow down.
Don't wear red.
Everybody wears a white outfit with a red belt and a red like handkerchief. And they release the bulls and you can't see anything because everybody that goes is Australian, essentially. Mm-hmm. So they're all like 6'4 and huge and you can't see down the street and bulls are low. Right. And so when they finally come, you realize that they're near because somebody in front of you just started cursing uncontrollably and running. Right. And you know, I start running and I'm jetting faster than I've ever gone in my life. And I get into the stadium at the end, I jump off to the side and the bull just swings by me. And this flood of testosterone just completely takes over my system. And
you survived.
I survived. But then because of the winner effect, I think like, okay, I'm going to go do something else. Now, what I didn't know that they do is they close off the gates, lock you in, and then they release the bulls in one at a time.
Ah.
And so they release this bull. I'm completely shocked, and I see people like running up to it. So I run up to the bull, and I touch it, and I run away.
Because you're feeling good.
And I'm feeling even better. So I'm like, what's better than that? So I walk up to, I run up to the one of the bulls, and I slap it on its ass.
Right.
And the bull turns around and looks at me, and I'm freaking out, and luckily somebody else distracts it and run away.
Right.
So now I'm so pumped full of testosterone, adrenaline, like winner effect in full force. How do the bulls enter the stadium? It turns out there's double gates. They run up an alley, and then people lie down on the ground, and the bull runs in and jumps over them. And they'll clear like 12 people deep. It's crazy.
Because they know they don't want to land on a person?
Yeah, because, I mean, they see an obstacle, so they jump, right? It's a natural inclination. Now, don't forget, the bulls have been starved for like 5 days, I think, at that point. They're just purely on... adrenaline and like...
And why are these people laying down?
Because probably the winner effect, right? Because you are so full
out of it.
And so the bull runs, and I literally took the safest position. I was crouched on the ground. I thought, like, oh, nothing's going to happen to me. The bull slips, jumps, but doesn't make its jump, and lands directly on my back.
You got the only non-athletic bull.
Seriously. Everything goes numb. I think I'm paralyzed.
You could have been.
Yeah. It was, I literally have an argument in my head about, you know, I might spend the rest of my life in a wheelchair was one side, and the other side was like, John, you would have never been happy not being the type of person.
To do this.
Yeah, like, it's just so ingrained in you to be completely wild. And I somehow managed to stand up, and I'm screaming for help because I know that there's something really wrong with my torso. And nobody can help me because they're pulling bodies out of the way from the rest of the people that were hit.
On that same jump.
Yeah.
Right.
And eventually I made it into an emergency room, and I had a hoof print embedded into my shoulder. Right. 6 months of physical therapy, it was craziness. But, you know, I never regret living that lifestyle.
Yeah. So, explain what effect that might have had.
It's interesting. There's a few things. One was I started really studying deeper and deeper into the science of adventure, what causes us to live exciting lives.
Right.
And I believe that there's three, I have a definition for adventure that I had to create because there's no explanation for it. And I know that you have this wildly interesting life, so tell me if this is for you. And it experiences an adventure if it...
Wait, don't say them. We're going to take a break.
For today's break, a tip from Spartan SGX. Did you know trail running is far better for your mind and your body than road running? Concrete is really hard on the joints, and let's face it, it can be extremely boring. The very terrain of trails spreads the stress of running across more and larger muscles, which decreases the risk of overuse. Additionally, being outdoors and the sights and sounds of nature have been scientifically proven to lift your mood and lower your rates of anxiety. Become unstoppable. Spartan SGX training.
It's always nice to get a little workout in there.
Exactly.
The sedentary lifestyle we live is just not working for me.
Good. So tell me these three things.
These three things. Okay, one, an experience is an adventure if it is exciting and remarkable. As a society, or as a species, we've passed down our knowledge through an oral history. If it's not worth remarking about, it's not culturally significant. That means if you have, and this applies to anything, if you have a business that you want to succeed, is the business worth talking about? Is it remarkable? You want something to go viral? It first has to be worth discussing.
Got it. Makes sense.
Right? Two, possesses adversity and or risk, preferably perceived risk. I learned that one the hard way. Right? So your brain actually processes an imminent danger, like an animal immediately attacking you, differently than it does, you know, skydiving. Right. But the physical response is almost identical. And so when you look at it, the important thing is to have something to overcome. Right? So just like the races, right?
Sure.
Or when you train or...
Caracalva.
Yeah, exactly. Then there needs to be something that is daunting to you.
Right.
That challenges you to push beyond your boundaries.
Burpees.
They will crush you.
They will crush you.
And then the third is, it brings about growth. The person that you are at the end has to be distinct from the person who started. Right? If you look at any great hero's journey, what was critical is that the person at the end of the story
was different than the person at the beginning.
Yeah. And so the real gift of a challenge, of an adventure, of whatever it is that you get to redefine who you are in the process.
Right.
Because the memories will fade. The stories will be replaced by something even more insane over time.
Sure.
But that expanded capacity, nobody can take that away from you. You are always that expanded person.
Yeah. It makes perfect sense because we talk a lot about transformation at Spartan Race, and why is it? It's a sport, right? We're going to try to get in the Olympics, but at its core, it's transformative, and so you just nailed why it is transformative.
So what's even more fascinating to me, as I started looking at this, I came across research about flow. So there's this researcher by the name of Mihai Csikszentmihalyi.
Were you with me, by the way, in that conference with the flow guy? I gotta tell you the story quick.
I love it.
Who's the guy that wrote Superman?
Oh, The Rise of Superman.
Yeah, The Rise of Superman.
I don't know but brilliant book.
Brilliant.
Loved it.
Yeah. So I walk into this conference in California, with a biohackers conference, and they've got this flow state going on, which I hadn't heard. I've been in a flow state, but I hadn't seen it institutionalized and written about, and so I was so impressed. They had all these gadgets. I think you were with me, right?
No.
You weren't with me.
It's Mike Isbell.
It's 7 a.m. because I'm an early person, and I'm checking out these gadgets, and I look over in the corner of my eye, and he's got this big adult swing that's going to get you in a flow state. But for whatever reason, immediately I'm like, I'm not going to try that one. I'm going to go try this thing that looks like snowboarding. Mm-hmm. I get on the snowboarding thing. Somebody else gets on the swing. 7 in the morning. They haven't fully set up yet. Out of the corner of my eye, I see someone flying through the air. The swing let loose on him. He is doing 70 miles an hour, doing complete stiff tumble salts through the air, 10 feet in the air. Lands on a table.
Oh, my God.
It was unbelievable. Thank God everybody was okay. But I saw flow state first. Anyway, sorry to regress, but it was it was unbelievable.
That's incredible. You see, because one of the things that gets you into flow state fastest is essentially a near-death experience.
Well,
right?
this was a near-death experience.
I like how the swing works. Yeah. It's like, we're going to try and kill you every day, but you're going to love every second of it. So in flow state, Mihai looked at... Across the board, if let's say artists, musicians, people who are writers, whatever it is,
best of the best,
business people, whatever it is, athletes, and he asked the question, "What is it when you're at this peak state of human performance?" And people describe this experience of being completely intertwined in their activity, where they don't know where they stop and the activity begins, and there's this complete loss of self-consciousness. It's you and the activity. You feel like everything you do is right, and your sense of time shifts completely. So things that happen very slowly, like hours of work might feel like they take minutes.
Right.
And things that happen very quickly feel they're slow. Like athlete taking a shot.
Right.
They'll sometimes report seeing all of the faces in the crowd.
Right.
Or a dancer going into a spin that's a fraction of a second,
right,
sees the entire environment perfectly. And in order to get into this state, you have to be doing something that requires skill, that is outside of your skill set, but still seems attainable, meaning you are reaching for something.
Right.
And so for me, this idea of being adventurous, you have to be pursuing something in both cases that's outside of your comfort zone.
Right. Right.
And when you look at yourself as an athlete or you look at yourself as a business person, it's always when you're striving for something that's just outside of your skill set.
Which most people, I guess, pulling this back to does the audience apply it to their everyday life, most people, I guess, don't do, right?
Oh, yeah. What happens is that most of us do things that are very familiar. And when something's familiar, your brain doesn't react to it,
right,
in the same way. Our brains are wired for novelty. Right? Novelty simply means something that's new or different. When we are exposed to something novel, our brains respond by releasing a flurry of chemicals to absorb those memories, and because it's different, and so it needs to adjust. But it also causes us or gives us a desire to explore. And it entices us so that we can understand our environment. But when something's familiar, you can be driving home, not even remember the drive, and you're like, what was I even doing at the time? How did I not end up in an accident?
Right.
But that's not remarkable. If you look back at the last month, how many of the days do you remember?
No, my wife always says to me I should slow down and go out and have drinks with people and watch football games, and that's just so ordinary, right? And that time just goes by, and you end up not really going anywhere in life. Whereas if you, I don't know if you should lay down and have bulls jump over you, but certainly maybe running alongside them,
mm-hmm,
right? Rappelling out the eighth story, like burpees, whatever it is,
yeah,
cold shower, just
something to
shake it up.
Yeah,
mix it up, right?
So it's interesting because a lot of the time creativity is seen as this thing like, oh, certain people are creative and certain others. But it's really the ability to bring together disparate ideas, like things that are different.
Yeah.
But if you don't have a variety of experiences to pull from, then it's more difficult to be creative.
Right.
And so regardless of if you want an improvement in your business, in your creativity, in whatever it is, having a variety of experiences to pull from can only improve that. And even if it's not a pleasant experience, so what?
Yeah, right. Some of the best things happen to me when you just don't feel like, oh, I don't feel like taking that meeting, or I don't feel it right. And it's like, oh, I wonder why that worked out. As a matter of fact, I was with a business person recently, and he said it's almost always the meeting he didn't want to take,
mm-hmm,
has turned out to be the good one. And he's trying to figure out why that is. But and it might be because nobody else wanted to take the meeting either, right? And who knows? But you got to do the things. I like to say you got to do the things that are uncomfortable. You got to do the things you don't necessarily want to do.
My basic premise to all of it is that the size of our life is in direct proportion to how uncomfortable we're willing to be.
I love it.
And so I always wish people an incredibly uncomfortable life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, somebody wrote me recently in an email. It was really funny. He says, hey, I hope you get totally f***ed over today. because that's the fun stuff, right?
Yeah.
Right?
It's, every so often, especially when you're in a routine, it's when things get kind of screwed up. And you get to like pull out your bag of skills.
Exactly. Get excited. And fight through.
There's, in fact, an indigenous people that have a policy that when they've lived somewhere for too long, the elders will tell the community that we're getting up and moving.
I love it.
Because if they get too sedentary or
complacent,
too comfortable,
yeah,
then the society begins to fall apart.
Right.
Because people just don't, they get lazy. But when you're in an environment that's uncomfortable,
everybody pulls together.
Yeah.
We had a hurricane come through our farm town in Vermont. And everybody pulled together.
Mm-hmm.
But then before the hurricane and after the hurricane, nobody talks to each other. And so
yes.
I get it completely. Tell us quickly, because we got to go, about mm-hmm. the 2 a.m. principle.
The 2 a.m. principle. I spent close to a decade traveling around the world trying to understand what causes people to live fun, exciting, and remarkable lives. It's literally the science of adventure.
Okay.
And I discovered that every adventurous experience follows a four-stage process. And so I combine outrageous stories like The Bull, or right. I battle Kiefer Sutherland in Drunken Jenga and then crash his family Thanksgiving as a byproduct.
Love it.
Within 10 seconds of meeting the woman behind the counter at Duty Free, I convince her to leave her job and travel with me. Essentially, each chapter combines a crazy story with scientific research on and explains how to apply it to our lives.
Let's hear it. Three things.
So first thing is that the most important thing you can do to live an exciting life is to say yes to things. Go out and try things regardless of if you think you're going to enjoy it or not. Second, do something that's slightly outside of your comfort zone. The reason is that that's the best way to enter, or one of the best ways to enter flow state. And second, it'll cause you to grow. And the more that you have those experiences, the better it'll go. And third is, take advantage of the winner effect. So you want to stack wins. If you feel like you're lethargic, things aren't going well, just get one win under your belt, and then another, and then another, and let that momentum build up, and then you'll be able to tackle huge problems.
Become a winner. Make it happen. See you soon.
What I loved about this, so John, as he described it, he said that he is a human behavior scientist. What was really cool about it, that's a pretty broad spectrum. You can look at why people do all kinds of stuff. And he was looking at adventure, and I love that. He picked the one trait and say, you know, why do people do these things? And really dove into that whole adventure. And I love that he said the size of your life will be proportionate to how uncomfortable you're willing to be.
And you told the story about
you getting an email from somebody saying, I hope you get completely effed over today.
Yeah, yeah.
So your life will be an adventure. And I just want to give a shout out to Jimmy Gayo, because that's a friend of mine who sent you that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I I'm sure you agree. I'm sure we all agree that, I'm sorry, I can't cut Seth out. But I'm sure we all agree that, I mean, that's what this whole sport movement is about, right? Get completely uncomfortable, get out of your comfort zone, and maybe you're in a little bit of pain at that moment, but when you reflect back, that's the dash between the beginning of your life and the end of your life.
Well, he talked about the winner effect, which is what you talk about in the sport.
We talk about a lot, yeah. So when you win,
taste of success,
right? When you win, you get all those chemicals released in your brain.
That is actual physiological.
It's a physiological change, and then when you get to the next starting line, you get a little release in the brain that gets you through the next challenge. Yeah. So, winning breeds winning.
And confidence. Yep. Confidence breeds confidence. You know, so.
But don't do the running of the bulls. I know you would probably do that. I'm not.
You be the bull.
I love the way he described it. About he'd get away with one thing, so he'd do something crazier and just crazier and crazier. Just that gets us in trouble. That's the story of my life.
I don't know. For the first time, we talk about getting comfortable, being uncomfortable. But the first time I'm thinking about, like, maybe people's definition of comfortable is like when they're miserable, they have so much anxiety. Like, what is that comfortable thing? Like, it seems like their baseline is actually not comfortable. It's just what they've become accustomed to, but people are really unhappy. Like, for example, I was running through Harvard because we're in Boston, and maybe it's they're comfortable, but these people are just like mindless shuffling zombies, and I'm like up on the wall running, and everyone's looking like, I don't know what I'm talking about.
They're just trying to figure out how you've got free time. You know,
or got free.
You know? But I think you're right. I mean, there's, you know, you get comfortable with the cage you're in, right? That's the problem. Sure. I mean, there's guys in prison that don't want to be let out.
That's right.
You know, there's people who have
it. It isn't just comfort as in like luxury. It's comfort as in routine, as in the thing
patterning.
You know. The thing you know.
Right. It's easier, right?
Exactly.
To put up with what you know as opposed to the unknown. There are families or the classic abused wife, right? Who could leave. And a lot, sometimes they have the means, the wherewithal, the money, whatever, and they still don't. It doesn't always have to be.
I'm amazed. I mean, I lock my wife up in the basement every day, and she doesn't leave. I mean, she's. I'm kidding. We love you. I love my wife to death, and I don't lock her up.
Who was just calling you from Japan a minute ago? Crazy.
But to break out takes risk, right?
Sure. I mean, absolutely. But that's a really neat thing too. Is he talks about what an adventure actually is, and he references Joseph Campbell and the idea that for it to be an adventure, it has to be A, exciting and remarkable.
Right.
So something worth remarking on, worth speaking about.
Talk about it.
Exactly. And the second one, which is great, he said there has to be a risk and hopefully just a perceived risk, right? Because we do things that are really risky, but I mean, it's the idea that you're going out and taking a chance that you may succeed or not. And then the last one is that something that caused you to grow. And the idea that we always come back from these things, from these adventures, having grown from the experience. We talked about that before with people who've been through traumatic experiences, and you got to find ways to grow through these things. And so I loved when he talked about these things that we put ourselves into, and we need to be willing to take a chance and to get out of that comfort zone. Because the other thing he said, and I may be paraphrasing, but he said, an experience doesn't have to be enjoyable to be valuable. And you talked about, you know, that some of the best things come with the thing you weren't going to do.
Right.
Well, I think also he's really smart, because now we live in a society that, unless there's a scientific study that says, hey, eating genetically processed garbage food's bad for you, or water in a plastic bottle isn't as good as spring water, and people like don't have common sense until a study's like, well, 11.6 people found. And so if that's what you need to have, like, you know, you're going to be healthy when you eat food you grow or stuff from the wild, anything else is not going to be as good for you.
I'm smiling.
But if you need a study, then blessings. But
I'm smiling at how you've suddenly become the arbiter of all things about who's smart. The people at Harvard are stupid.
Yeah.
but he's smart. Yeah.
No, but I'm just saying, like, for people who need statistics and want to understand adventure raising, who
and
have that analytical mind.
78.3% of people do.
And 11.6 say, I don't care. But anyways.
Let's wrap it up. But what I did want to say is you don't have to go out at 2 a.m. or even at 1 a.m.
to have adventure.
To have adventure and have fun. And obviously we are not promoting drinking and doing all that stuff. Yeah. After hours, you could have plenty of adventure. Like going running in the rain.
Yeah.
You're not going to drown.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're not
right?
Gonna drown.
I think about that. When you're standing at a store and everyone's huddled in the doorway, waiting for the rain to break. Well, you made it of sugar? Your car's right there.
Plants need rain. But I think more people should adventure at night, Joe. Like, last night was the full moon. Okay, not whenever this broadcast.
You could go out on snowshoe. I'm just not advocating going out drinking and partying and running with the bulls. Now, go check out the bulls, but don't get stampeded.
Right? Reminds me of a race you put on in Mexico.
That's another story.
But this is also a side of Joe that most people don't see. Listen, don't do that hard stuff. Don't do the crazy stuff. So, hey, do something easy. Go to your computer, click on YouTube, and go watch us if you're listening on iTunes. Go to spartan.com/podcast. You'll see all kinds of great interviews. And come back and see you soon.
Thank you for watching another epic story of success. If you like our message, please share Spartan Up with your friends and subscribe on iTunes, YouTube, or wherever you catch our show, maybe in the woods. Spartan Up is brought to you by Spartan Race. To find a race near you, visit spartan.com.